And greetings once again, retreatants. It's Pastor Bob, and as you probably are well aware, this is day 7 of our 7-day journey with Thomas Merton. The last day of our retreat. We'll have a part A, and we'll have a part B, keeping with the pattern we've been using. Pulling it all together. Today's theme is integration. Integration. And we'll begin with the words of Thomas Merton himself. Merton says this: each of us has to find the unity in which everything fits and takes its right place. Each must work out just what the right amount may be. And it varies at different times of our life. You see, Merton's search for unity with God was a lifelong search. And as this retreat comes to its end, that also becomes our own task. The holding together of all those elements in our life that will bring us energy and integration. That's our task. The holding together of all those elements of our life that will bring us energy and integration. We know only too well what it is like to live as a distracted person. Pulled first in one direction, then in another. And one of the purposes of this time apart, this retreat, has been to have the chance to think before God about the person we are now, today, about our place in God's world, and about the direction in which our life points us. Above all, we need to decide how we can hold together our life of inner stillness and prayer, that contemplative side of ourself, the Mary part of ourselves, if you will, with the Martha, who is committed to the demands of a busy, active life. Shout out to Carol and Joe there with the Mary and Martha reference. Merton is such a good guide here, for he was so aware of being pulled in many directions. His journey was hardly ever tranquil, for he was always facing up to tensions within himself and in the outside world. Even when he was still quite young, Merton was always conscious of the, what he calls, tremendous immanent powers of light or darkness, peace or conflict, order or confusion, love or sin. The choices are open. The question faces us, as it faced Merton, faces each one of us. Now, in which direction shall we go? Thomas Merton, as we now know, was prepared to face questions with honesty and without evasion. All his life he was moving forward, being drawn by new ventures and new issues. He struggled with conflict, and when in the 50s and 60s he became involved in peace issues, it was as though the outer world mirrored his inner reality. He knew that peace in the world can only exist if each of us is at peace in the core of our being. And as he watched the forces of hate and anger, of violence and destruction, and as he saw the pain and fragmentation that resulted, he wrote about the human need for harmony, for a whole and integrated experience of peace at all levels of ourself. The need for harmony, for a whole and integrated experience of peace at all levels of ourselves, physical level, emotional level, and spiritual level, and both as an individual and in community. Indeed, one way of seeing Thomas Merton's life is as an odyssey towards unity. An odyssey towards unity. His path towards healing and maturity was one of unification. He faced the opposites and the tensions within himself, and he allowed them to converge. In doing this, he becomes a symbol of the way in which we have watched in the 20th century and now the 21st century, the bringing together of East and West, or of masculine and feminine, and of secular and religious. Indeed, Merton's interest in the East has at times been controversial. He says, "We must contain all divided worlds in ourselves." He learned much in his later years from the study of Eastern thought, and in particular from Zen. He spent 5 years studying texts from 4th and 5th century Taoist circles. He was attracted to them because he found there, as he said, a certain taste for simplicity, for humility, self-effacement, silence, and in general, a refusal to take seriously the aggressivity, the ambition, the push, and the self-importance which one must display in order to get along in society. A refusal to take all of that seriously. He also discovered there the role played by the central pivot through which passed yes and no, I and non-I, that point of duality. He discovered here the role played by that central pivot with through which passed yes and no, I and non-I. Here he found the complementarity of opposites. And this became extremely important for him. Envision in your mind the yin-yang symbol, that complementarity of opposites. Here then, here at this pivot point, are light slash dark, good slash evil, masculine slash feminine. In fact, the white and the black of that yin-yang symbol show that contradiction exists, but yet each flows into the other. At the start of each one, there is a small portion of the other. If you take them separately, you see, each side appears contradictory. Yes or no. I or not I. But taken as a whole, they flow together and become one dynamic unity. Yes and no. I and non-I. Perhaps the biggest contradiction for Thomas Merton is the same as for so many of us. The holding together of a life of prayer with a life of activity, so that the one may flow smoothly into the other and the two can be held together as a dynamic unity. Again, perhaps the biggest contradiction for Merton, as for so many of us, was the holding together of a life of prayer with a life of activity, so that the one may flow smoothly into the other and the two can be held together as a dynamic unity. You see, it's right at this point where he is so relevant for us on this final day of the retreat. It's this simple question from the Gospels. How do I combine both Mary and Martha? How do I work out a commitment to time for silence and for prayer, and a commitment to doing my job properly and my responsibilities towards the people who need me? We all have to work this out. This is a question about which Merton thought and wrote a great deal throughout his life. You see, even when he moved to the Hermitage, it did not take him away from the urgent needs and demands of the world. Rather, it brought him closer to the world's problems, and he addressed those problems out of a heart of compassion, which came to him through his prayer. He says, true solitude is being deeply aware of the world's needs. It does not hold the world at arm's length. And then he says this, it is in deep solitude that I find the gentleness with which I can truly love my brothers and my sisters. The more solitary I am, the more affection I have for them. It is pure affection and filled with reverence for the solitude of others. Solitude and silence teach me to love my brothers and my sisters for what they are, not for what they say. So as we look towards the end of Part A today, you may think it ironic that prayer and solitude should bring a deeper awareness of the world's needs. Yet, this is what Merton tells us time and again. He would say that any question of choosing the world or choosing Christ, as though deciding between two conflicting realities, He would say that's completely misguided, that either-or thinking. The world or Christ, completely misguided. Let's close with his own words on this. He says, do we choose Christ by choosing the world as it really is in him? That is to say, created and redeemed by him and encountered in the ground of our own personal freedom and of our love? If the deepest ground of my being is love, he says, then in that very love itself and nowhere else will I find myself and the world, my brothers and sisters, and Christ. It is not a question of either or, but rather all in one, of wholeness, wholeheartedness and unity, which finds the same ground of love in every little thing. And that completes part A of our day 7 day of retreat with Thomas Merton. Integration. Part B, the final session of our retreat, will be along shortly. But until then, take your hand and reach out for Jesus's robe. Touch it. Grab it like you'll never let go of it. And feel that power that comes to you directly from him. Amen.